Well, here he is, folks. Here comes the Colonel.
Oh, yeah, another actor from Comedy Central rehearsing down the hall, sneaking in here and disrupting a serious science program. All right, well, welcome back. The second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. In just a minute, we're going to get back to our interview with David Irwin, co-author, along with John Wu, of Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity, published by CRC Press, a fascinating study for us. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments are the voice of reason, but right now, we're going to step over to our fountain of useless information here on the set, and for today's query, we're going to rummage around in the coin jar here and ask our question.
Welcome to the Fountain of Useless Information. How can I help you?
Okay, we have thrown in the coins, and so that gets the attention of the know-all, hear-all, see-all, and tell-all for a price, Spirit of the Fountain. Okay, oh, Spirit of the Fountain, here is one for you. Who was the First Lady to preside at a press conference for women reporters? The very first First Lady to preside at a press conference for women reporters. Who was it, my dear Spirit of the Fountain?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Aha! The Spirit of the Fountain keeping his eyes on the ladies. The First Lady to preside at a press conference for women reporters? Why, of course, Eleanor Roosevelt, the liberated woman. All right, well, back to today's exciting guest, David Irwin. Oh, how nice. The Science News Studio Band taking us back to our interview with David Irwin, co-author along with John Wu of Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity. When we broke in the previous half hour, David was saying that Americans, in light of this leak with the NSA, are willing to give up some liberty and some privacy in order to have safety.
I don't understand why we don't try to concentrate our efforts on the people that we know to be in the bad guys and so forth. Why do you have to collect that on everybody? You know what I mean? So I think that I personally, for example, I thought they had been collecting all this information on all these people that caused all the trouble in Boston, and then it didn't block it. So now where are we?
Well, yeah, and you mentioned safety, and certainly we want to be safe for the bad guys who might be prowling over there, in the shadows trying to get a hold of us. But we've learned from experience through thousands and thousands of years that citizens have to be safe from their government. And the government could oppress the citizens as they did 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago. The church did it. And it's easier today for a government to oppress its people than ever because of all of this spying and the security. So if we're guaranteed that we have a nation of liberty and checks and balances, which is what we like to think we have, then along comes a guy like Richard Nixon, who uses the FBI and the CIA subvert the U.S. Constitution. And so this privacy is not just the fact we don't want people nosing around. We don't want people to oppress us. Don't we have a fear not only of the bad guys, but of our own government turning into being a bad guy?
Well, I think that we have to be concerned about that, and that's why I think that it's very, very important that the Constitution be upheld, because the Constitution is what really protects us. That's what makes the U.S. different from everybody else in the world, is that we have a Constitution that spells out what you can and cannot do, and that Constitution is a genius. I mean, what those forefathers thought of and put in that thing is just incredible, and I think that if we would just always make sure that we always follow the Constitution, I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Well, I think that's, of course, exceptional advice, and I can agree with you absolutely to the letter. But then we're reminded that the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution talks about illegal searches and seizures. And that has come to be expanded in various different ways. At one time, you couldn't take blood because of an illegal search and seizure. But now the Supreme Court says, well, yeah, but you can swab the inside of the mouth and collect that kind of data. So we're kind of bending and moving around the Fourth Amendment, too. So the Constitution gets interpreted, it gets moved around, and is it really the safeguard that we think we need to have in place if we're going to allow the government to go through all this cybersecurity stuff and include citizens too?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I guess I just have to believe that if we'll just do the everybody will operate in good faith and follow the Constitution. I think we've got the best protection that we can possibly get. You can never. The bad guys and people that wanna understand, wanna mind our business and everything else, those kind of people are always going to be around, and we can only do what we can do. You know. So.
Okay, so in essence, cybersecurity, cyber warfare is a fact of life. It's going to get more dangerous all the time, and we better damned well be able to know how to protect ourselves. So when should we start teaching this technology in our schools? You're an educator. You think it should be very young?
Yes, I think the younger the better. For example, today you think about today's children, and they grow up in this digital age. They're completely at home with this technology. They're completely always using it. They're, you know, you're on smartphones, they're texting, they're on Facebook, they're on Twitter. People even grow up using paying bills online. They do all kinds of things like that. So these students are perfectly capable of understanding this at a very, very young age. John and I have heard, now I cannot verify that, I can't name the particular schools or this, that, and the other, that we hear that this stuff is already being taught in the K-12 at some level, and I don't know what level. I assume it must be at least in high school in China, that they're already teaching this kind of stuff there. And so we think that this is something that the earlier the better to learn this kind of business. And so we think that it can be taught at a very low level. And what we have done is we have tried to design this book with that in mind. In other words, what we did was we put this book together in such a way that the book has examples that are based on typical things that people do in their daily life. We've got colorful graphics that there's more than 1,100 to demonstrate the key principles and so forth. We were very fortunate that our publisher at CRC Press, Nora Konopka, decided that she made a decision that they would publish this book in full color. That is a very expensive way to publish a book.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a lot of books, I know.
Oh, yeah.
And so what the to publish a book in full color, but what it did was, by doing that, we were able then to take screenshots of all the things that have come up on the computer. In other words, we don't go through and tell somebody how to do this kind of thing. We demonstrate it. We show them with visual pictures, but it says, click on this and this screen will appear.
Mm-hmm.
Click on this and this screen will appear, and so forth. So that what it does is it shows somebody visually exactly what can do, how this operates. So it demonstrates how to achieve better security through these things by we employ the most widely used product technology, and we do this, and this is one of the most key issues right here, is we do this without any sophisticated mathematical cryptography. This business is all based on that kind of thing. The mathematicians are that lay at the base of this kind of thing. When you look at one of the math books that deals with cryptography, and you can hardly read it. It looks like Greek. But what we have done is we have done this in such a way, we put this thing together in such a way that somebody who knows very little about this kind of business can follow it, because if you can click a mouse, you can go through and go through these examples. And the examples, as I said, are things that people use in their daily life, and so they're familiar with this kind of thing. So we show all the kinds of attack and defense measures are illustrated then with diagrams and screen captures, so that it allows you to see exactly what's happening with this business as you go through. And it's the best way, we think, to teach somebody. And as a result of the fact that it's done in that manner, these children that are very familiar with I am absolutely astounded at how fast I watch some of the even my own grandchildren, and I'll say, how can I do this on my computer? And they're clicking so fast from screen to screen that I can't even follow it. You know, so they're very, very familiar with this kind of business. And we think that as a result of doing it this way, we have provided a book that people can use anywhere from the earliest time that they can become familiar with this, which we think is down to the K-12 somewhere, depending upon the school and depending upon the level of sophistication that the children are using at that point in time, all the way up into college and so forth.
Well, in browsing through the book, I was very impressed by the very things that you just got through talking about. I want to remind the listeners, it's Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity, published by CRC Press and co-authored by J. David Irwin and John Wu. I thought in reading it that it was so comprehensive, because it is an enormous book. It looks to me as though an instructor could go through the book and could pick out things from the book that could be used to teach people in very low grades or up through more middle grades, and then things for more advanced students, and that it's a wonderful teaching book for instructors who may want to teach all these different grades in some level of networks and cybersecurity. Is that what you intended?
You've hit the nail on the head. That is exactly what we did. We have tried to prepare this thing in such a manner that someone can do that. They can go in and pick out certain parts of the book and select it where you can either handle it from a standpoint of somebody who wants to just get a kind of a cursory idea of what's going on, or somebody who wants to attack it at a more difficult level, whatever. But we've tried to address every single possible way for someone to use this book, and that's exactly. I mean, you have summarized it better than I can.
Well, David, tell me now, this is a very elastic subject, and of course we know that very well from and listeners that have been listening to this program for years. You see how we've kind of progressed in trying to take a peek at cybersecurity. So in that case, what are your plans? Are you and John going to collaborate in doing updates or try to do addendums or things like this to add to the book as you go along? Is there any plans there, or is this it for now?
No, you're absolutely right. This, as you indicated, this is a subject that is changing all the time, and what John and I have done is we have already started on the next edition. when we published this book, we absolutely, as it was going to press, we were changing things at the very last minute. At some point in time, we just had to stop. You know, once they start turning the presses, we can't add anything after that.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
We did that. We made it as up to date as we could possibly be, and as you've indicated, this thing is like a Bible. We tried to make it that. We tried to cover every single thing that anybody could possibly want to know, and to do it in a manner that they could really understand it. And so what we've done is we have already begun the process of updating the book. We're preparing now the second edition of the book at this moment, and adding all the new things that are coming on, and we continue to do that. We're going to just keep this book up to date all the time, so that somebody who is interested in this subject will know that there's a one shop stop where they can, one stop shop, whatever it is, that you can go to, and you can always get the information right here, because we'll have the latest information and the most up to date technology prepared in that new edition.
Well, the reason I bring that up is because I'm sure that many things in the book are going to stay as they are. I mean, they're pretty, they're elementary, they're basic, they're built in, and that sort of thing, so you don't have to completely rewrite the book all the time. But there's areas there that will need the updating. And so I'm wondering if somebody has this book in their library, as I do, is it possible to maybe get some bulletins and updates and things like that during the course of your studies, so that the book that I have sitting on the shelf doesn't have to be scrapped and the new book put in, and it all... And a lot of the stuff that I have is good already.
Well, that's an excellent point, and I think that we'd have to talk to our publisher about how to do that, because it may well be, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do now is, and I think that they will actually do it with this, is to publish this thing as an e-book.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, when it's done in that manner, now we're not talking about paper any longer, that we can update these things continuously and probably could put it in the manner in which you're talking about as a continuous update stream, which someone could obtain from the publisher that would keep this process up to date all the time.
Yeah, maybe once someone purchases the book, they can have access then to e-book updates constantly, so that they can always keep their book fresh. Well, that's one angle. Now, look into the future. Put on the meditation cap here for just a minute. Sit down. Put on the meditation cap. Get nice and comfortable, and kind of close your eyes and give us a peek into the future. What are your predictions for the future in this area? Maybe 5 years, 10 years down the line. What do you see?
Well, it's always dangerous to get downstream, but there are some things that I think are almost a sure thing, and that is that I'm amazed at watching some of the students now that they no longer can write in script. They don't know what that is. You show them something handwritten, and they can't read it. Everything now has gone into. They're doing away sometimes with formal language, and abbreviations like LOL become something that is just a normal part of their operation. So in other words, things are getting to the point where we abbreviate in things, we're coding things, so to speak, and whatnot. But that the pace, I think, that of everything is quickening. Things are getting faster and faster. I keep saying that things that we did years ago that would take days or weeks, now we do it in just a matter of minutes on the computer going back and forth. And as a result of that, you know, you see things now that where everything is going to move to the cloud. You know, we're going to take all our data and stick it out on the cloud, and so we're going to be able to access that thing, and anybody can access it. So things are migrating to the cloud. We're doing away basically with paper. So that, for example, I just recently had to fill out a travel voucher, and the travel voucher was online. I filled out everything online. The only thing I did not have was I had a hotel receipt and an airline receipt, which was in paper. So I scanned those and then put those into the computer. So that thing went complete in. If I had the hotel receipt and I'd had the airline receipt in electronic form, the whole thing would have been done that way. So we're moving. Everything is moving to cyberspace, is what it is. And as things do, it will inevitably get more. The security issues are not going to go away. And the one thing that I'm pretty sure is not going to change, and that is human nature. I really believe that these crooks are going to be with us for a long, long time, and forever, I guess, and they're getting, the other thing is they're getting smarter and smarter. These people that are involved in this are not dumb bunnies. These are really smart, clever individuals. And as a result of that, so you're looking at, you say that, well, everything, so much of our work, almost everything is moving away from paper. It's moving to cyberspace. You've got the criminals that are getting smarter and smarter. They're not going away. So the one thing that you have to understand is, I think, is that as our lives revolve more and more into cyberspace, the need to understand security and to be as up to date as you possibly can, at least, will be a paramount part of our lives.
That's quite a picture, and I have to agree with you. Looking at LOL, when I first saw LOL, it really threw me a number of years ago, because in my day LOL meant laugh out loud. It didn't mean lots of luck. It didn't mean laugh out loud. So that was pretty funny. All right, David, a word of wisdom, something that you maybe learned late in life, you wish you would have learned earlier, or something you'd like to pass on to people. Parting thought, some profound idea. What do you have for us?
Well, I wish I had a good one. I think that I just believe that hopefully we'll be able to we'll be able to beat this system that is occurring right now, the problems that we're running into, that the security of all our information, I think, is just going to be under a constant attack. I don't think there's anything that we can do to avoid that. I think that these attacks are going to be more sophisticated and more lethal, and I just keep coming back to the issue that I think that we're just going to have to be as security savvy as we possibly can be. And so if we don't do that, even our minor mistakes are going to open the door to larger problems. And I wish I had a better bullet than that, but that's where I see this business going.
All right, J. David Irwin, co-author, along with John Wu, of Introduction to Computer Networks and Cybersecurity, published by CRC Press. David is now the Earl C. Williams Eminent Scholar in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at Auburn University. Thank you immensely for taking the time to be with us today. We are enjoying your book incredibly. Value it as a valuable tool here in the studio, and we hope you'll come back with updates for us as time goes by. Thanks, David.
I'd be delighted, and thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it very, very much, okay?
Well, I don't often do this, but I want to take a minute and talk to you personally. Our visit with Dr. Irwin drove home, it seems, a real truth. Those of us who believe that Edward Snowden, the guy that leaked the surveillance secrets of the National Security Agency, should be prosecuted, as most Americans agree, according to a poll in USA Today and the Pew Research Center, might better step back and take another look. You know, if what Snowden did was really so egregious and detrimental to U.S. security, why did our government allow a person at his level to have access to this information at all? Isn't the real culprit here Booz Allen Hamilton, the government contractor that allowed for this breach, and our own NSA for lack of oversight? The reason we need to look at Snowden as a patriot and not as a criminal is because a criminal, a person with terrorist intent, who could have just as easily infiltrated the sloppy activities at Booz Allen Hamilton, would have kept quiet and used the information to really hurt us. Snowden blew the whistle. And sadly, the only ones who should be angry are the security people at Booz Allen Hamilton and the NSA, who were not doing their jobs in guarding this information. As Dr. Irwin says, the bad guys are not going away anytime soon. Our security people stupidly snoozed in leaving us vulnerable before 9/11. And it seems our NSA and its contractors haven't smartened up any. They're the ones who should be prosecuted, not Snowden. And the best place to start is at the top with Jim Clapper. That's just how I see it. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
Never underestimate what you can find by looking at just fundamental ideas and just how unpredictable research can be and how important it is to keep open your ideas as far as research is concerned. And it's a very important lesson for governments and research advisors and people of this nature to say you must keep fundamental science, let young people who are smart do what they want, and that's the way to find the unexpected and also make the biggest breakthroughs, because those breakthroughs that are unexpected are in general much more important than those that are expected. Harry Kroto, Francis Epps Professor at Florida State University in the Department of Chemistry and biochemistry.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.